SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans from Bally's Las Vegas. And starting fresh and starting with some verve after yesterday's rather convoluted and tortured 3 hours. haven't had one of those in a while. And we should be smoother. I am also fresher and ready to attack after some poolside activity yesterday. I'm going to remind everybody, for those of you that have not left, that are leaving today later maybe to Vegas or tomorrow for day one on Friday, and I've got some day one news to talk about. Do not forget your swimming apparel. Like Trey Stiles did. Our mindset for those that have been coming to this for any length of time is, you know, that we're here in January and February, and wherever we've stayed, the pools aren't open. So remember, it's 104 out there. Just an FYI. But it's a dry heat. you got to be Lawrence of Arabia to make your way around here after about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. That is a new phenomena because, frankly, there's been several winters NHC periods, right? Where, I mean, it was downright cold. And was it 2 years ago we had flurries? It flurried, right? Or was that last year? Might have been last year. There were flurries. it's a whole different scenario here. Believe me. So bring do some poolside handicapping, which I'm going to be doing later, certainly. And I mentioned, and did I tweet it or load it up and not send it? I did. I loaded it up and didn't send it. Here it goes. Boom. It's on the way. A couple of things before we start diving in, and Phil Serpy will be with us in about 15 minutes. We'll talk to Pete as well. We'll get Pete's from Saratoga perspective going into NHC, and we've got Sid. We've got the Saratoga draw. We've got Travers draw. I think 10:45. As well. We'll see who wanders in here. Trey might come back downstairs, and he got a lot more of his. He did join us by the pool, and even though he forgot his swimsuit, he had a pair of, you know, like basketball shorts that were serviceable as swim attire. And he says that, you know, he really, what you heard from him just minutes ago, if you were listening to the replay. And I was really glad that he said what he did, because it echoed what I had brought up with Keith Shamblin earlier in the morning yesterday, that it makes a big difference. Especially if you're an East Coaster, it took me, I can't tell you how long in my business career, that I'd come west and be just completely useless for, you know, it would take me about 72 hours to adjust. So from that standpoint, it was, and Trey's only coming from Houston. So, and John Nichols is doing it too. John across the street, and he also likes seclusion, and you know, everybody loves to go out, and there's different, I guess there's different philosophies and approaches, but That is one thing that if you can afford the extra 24 hours or even 48, that was completely unprompted that Trey produced that. I just sent you, if you're out, if you're Twitter accessible, just sent the screenshot of tomorrow's First Chance, Next Chance tournament. And there will be, you know, there'll be people that, depending on the quantity and the count, head count, there'll be play-ins, successful play-ins tomorrow into Friday with the two Saratoga races, the 5th and the 9th, Woodbine 8th, Del Mar 3rd, and those are the three tracks. Full card accessibility for Saratoga and Woodbine, the 1st through 10th tomorrow, and at Woodbine, the 1st through the 8th, and at Del Mar, the first four. Those are the 22 races that are available tomorrow. For those of you that are getting ready for Friday, the slate starts at 1:05 at Saratoga, and the full Friday 11 card state bred program, New York Showcase Day, is available. Ellis, their 8 race card, Gulfstream's 10 race card, Monmouth, their 10 race card, and that's notable that Monmouth is having a full day of racing Friday, and not this may actually benefit some people that Monmouth is having the full card on Friday, because they've been, of course, doing the Friday 6 race twilight action. So full slate of 10 for Fast Times on the Jersey Shore, and Golden Gate 7 race card, Woodbine 8, and 8 at Del Mar. 62 races available for NHC players on Friday, day one, and the mandatories might be out as early as today, and I think they might be monitoring when Keith comes down. We'll get maybe an update on that front. I think they're monitoring some weather, and they want to make a determination on that standpoint about mandatories, particularly obviously for the turf races. So we'll see. There is, you know, I was not distressed, but I did note that the forecast heading into the weekend in New York, in particular with Travers Day on Saturday, has a little bit of an overcasty, you know, 50-50, you know, scenario. What are we, 72 hours out? So not terrible at all, but a little, you know, just a hint. You know, obviously this time of year down in South Florida, they could, you know, they could easily get hit at any time. So we'll see from Keith if they're going to release the mandatories, see if he knows by the time we wrap up today at noon, if they're going to get the mandatories out late today or whether it'll be first thing Thursday that you'll have the Friday mandatories. All right. So there's your quick race slate update. And I've got screen caps of all of those schedules. The contest tomorrow and day one of the National Horse Players Championship, and the ballroom is taking shape. They got quite a bit done yesterday. They haven't skirted the tables and that kind of thing, but otherwise pretty darn nice. And by the time anybody gets here, it'll look like it'll look like it did for your prom. There's a prom theme, right? There's a prom theme for everybody. That actually, I you know what? Now that I say that, I guarantee that somewhere out there, particularly in Kentucky, there's been Derby Day as a prom theme, right? As opposed to you know, under the sea Back to the Future. Back to the racing and a couple of things. We're going to also talk to Bill Downs. I forgot about Bill. They're starting early in Indiana today. In fact, they're starting in an hour. 10 o'clock start, and they've been very careful about the high temperature issues in central Indiana. And so they moved the card up, and it's actually today, there's a heat advisory, but only into the high 80s. So it doesn't feel like it's a huge problem, but they want to get the day done as early as possible. Yeah, the high heat index drives up late afternoon. So by starting at 10, they'll be able to rifle through. They're starting basically 4.5 hours early. So they'll be done, and they've got an 11 race card today with the two stakes. So they'll be done by 3. Yeah, they'll wrap up at 3, it looks like. So kind of Eric Hallstrom just, doing everything right. We'll talk to Bill about the two terrific stakes today. They've got two Indiana bred stakes, a mile and a 16th on the turf for the girls. That goes first, the Peony, and then the Bechero goes second, and should be full fields in both. There's 12 going in, and there's AEs for the boys' race, and one AE for the girls. And I thought there was a couple of decent prices in the boys' race. Strong Tide, Michael Lauer, of course, and 7-2 favorite. He the worst to beat, but there's a couple of surface switches. And Lauer actually has a horse that I thought was okay as well, that if he takes to the turf. And Lauer tried to get, that's Chip Off the Old Block, 8-1 with Miguel Mena. And I love Mena. Tried to get Chip Off the Old Block on the grass last time, rained off in a conditional allowance, money allowance for state breds. An interesting consideration. There's also leading the charge for Chris, not for Chris Block, it's for Team Block, but Bob Dobbs trains, and leading the charge is 6-1. So I thought the 2 and the little 3, but Strong Tide, and I didn't come up with anything super clever, frankly, in the girls' race. 3, 7, 9, 10, a couple of 6-1s, and the two favorites. So we'll see what Bill thinks. I can tell you one thing. Yesterday, again at Indiana, two odds-on winners in that pick 5, and then 3. Fairly somewhat tricky horses. You had a 1480 winner. You had the toughest horse was a 12-1 shot, Galileo's Rock, for Joe Davis, paid 2760. So those were the two challenging horses. And then you had the two odds on. So you could have really tiptoed easily through the two, 3-5, 4-5s. The pick 5 paid another 1600. If you put some work in, it's crazy. It's just crazy. Monday, 10,000. It absolutely should be looked at every day that they're racing at Indiana. Look at the sequence. So we'll talk to Bill after the first race. He said, wait until after the first race. So before Sid joins us, we'll slip in, because we haven't talked to Bill in 2 weeks, or 3 weeks, in fact. All right? So that's also on the agenda. And what else can I bring you up to speed on here before Phil joins us? Actually, not a lot, in fact. And we'll get Casey worked virtually all day yesterday on the crazy phone system. So we're going to test it early and often this morning until some bodies cycle through. And also, Todd Pletcher owes us a, I'm sure he'll, I imagine he'll be at the draw. So maybe we'll get be able to get to him a little bit later. As anticipated, and we'll talk to Seth too. Seth, you know, there's so many people that have you know, started to not started to, but have been coming here, you know, traditionally, and that includes Capital OTB, and you know, with the conflict. I mean, it's a conflict. Who's kidding who? You know, in a lot of cases. I mean, if Paul Matisse, you know, made the conscious decision not to attend and leave Saratoga this week, you know how you know how tough of a situation it is when making the decision. I mean, here's a one of the champions. In this contest. So, Seth normally now would come. I think this would have been his fourth year. And Pete, we'll get Pete's thoughts too in a little bit after we talk to Phil. So, the draw today, and I did give you some of the, right? Did I give, for you missed, we went over that yesterday, I think, with the, turn back to that. That's for Smiling Phil, and there we go. And there he is. Phil Serpe joins us, and I, you know, going into the Queen's Plate on Sunday, was so excited, and especially when John Nichols, when I mentioned that John Nichols, who had been on at Saratoga all summer, he said the Serpe horse is for real, and it was a matter of taking to the synthetic, and Phil Serpe adds a Queen's Plate to his terrific career. Phil, congratulations.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
I'm so excited for you. At what point in your career did you think, I wouldn't mind having a, an Ontario sired or type to go up to and win a race like this?
My whole career, we wherever they're bred, whatever color they are, whatever sex they are, whatever surface they run in, they're welcome to come to our barn. Everybody just wants to win, and obviously these kind of races take you to the top. We're just really happy that we could get this done for the Vukoviches, and getting up to Canada and with the COVID virus creating some transportation issues, that sort of thing. We're just very happy that everything came around at the right time.
Well, and you got a chance to, to get Arad Ortiz aboard as well, and that doesn't hurt. There's so many parts of this that I want to explore, and that includes, the idea of the synthetic and the expectation there. The general principle is, if they're a turf horse, they'll translate to synthetic, but that's, that's relative. Talk about this horse and, how quickly you realized that you had something nice here, a $45,000 Bodemeister.
Last year when he came in as a two-year-old, he was kind of a big, clunky horse, because he's pretty tall, and he was just at an awkward stage. But the one thing that you couldn't help to notice is he just absolutely loved his job. He's a horse that's always in the front of the stall. When he's out on the track, he just loves to train. He'll go 18 seconds an eighth every day if you let him, 14 if you'd let him. He just really, really loves his job. And we had no idea about winning a race like this, but we did have an idea this horse was going to be some kind of a winner. He just everything he did, he just seemed to just take in and love it. So those are the kind of horses you want to get in your barn. So we were pretty confident last year that this was going to be a nice horse. Again, we just didn't know how far he was going to go.
as you watched him develop, and you know he was bought as a weanling, actually, the Keeneland November, and you started him on the dirt, Bodie Meister out of a congrats mare, and then you quickly made the transition not only to the turf last summer at Saratoga, but also a route of ground, and that alone, I thought, was a fairly clear sign that there was talent. I mean, they run a horse a mile and a 16th in his second start, and he wins.
Well, yeah, you know what? He was never meant, you know, to sprint on the dirt, but given a horse a race up here, and given any young horse a race can really help them a great deal. It can do more for them, both mentally and physically, than you can get in the barn, done in the barn in a month. And so by design, we gave him a race on the dirt, knowing that we were headed for the turf in his next start. And what we didn't know was he was very impressive in his first turf start, in his first race going long, you know, against some pretty well-meant horses up here. You know, people come up here to fire their best shots, and that race was impressive. And I don't know the stats for sure, but I believe it was the fastest two-year-old race run on the turf, or maiden race run on the turf at the time, or during the meet, whatever. The numbers were good, and so that part of it, we were just pleasantly surprised. You know, we thought he was going to be a nice horse, but you know, at what level, we had no idea.
I got to ask this about the purchase. How was he acquired, and who identified him?
That's all in Bob Vukovich's corner. He kind of gets out there and buys horses everywhere. He buys them at auction. He sells them at auction. He buys them off of farms. I have no idea. I was kidding around with him because he sent us a bunch of horses. Nothing this nice came along yet. So we really had an idea that this horse was going to do some good for him. So I was kidding with him. I said, well, what, did your wife pick this one out or something? I said, this horse looks like he's a pretty nice horse. And I'm not so sure if he thought that was as funny as I did, but that's all Dr. V. He found this horse, him and his farm manager. He has a beautiful farm in Colts Neck. Wellspring Stables has just a beautiful farm in Colts Neck, New Jersey. And they get out there and they find these horses, and my hat's off to them for finding this guy.
One of the reasons that it's been a summer of, there's been a parade of modest priced success stories, $20,000 for that filly of Rudy's, and last week we had who was it for $30,000? Lee Einsiedler, $80,000 for the Saratoga Special winner, $45,000 for this one, and as it happens, the dam is a half to Fatal Bullet. I mean, this was really a very clever purchase, it seems, and the talent level seems like it's still a developmental stage. That allowance win, beating Public Sector, actually, the Pennine Ridge came off the turf, so you don't hold that against them, and he really didn't run badly in the Belmont Derby, but it probably helped to prepare him and tighten him up for the effort on Sunday.
Yeah, you know, in the Pennine Ridge, the race had pretty much fallen apart, and we just felt like when you see this horse and you watch him train on dirt, turf, whatever, he just wants to train. I actually felt like it would not have surprised me at all if he would have won that race that day, but it was wishful thinking. Better to trade that one in for this one, I guess, looking back at it. And then the track comes up sloppy, and he just didn't want any part of it. And then in the Belmont Derby, that track was a lot softer than they let on to. We had gotten quite a bit of rain at Belmont, And, you know, that thing was pretty soft. And he just wasn't going anywhere on it. But the good thing about him, he's a super high-energy horse. And, like, the next day, you know, he's just ready to go at it again. And a lot of times, you know, like, you'll bring a horse back from, say, like, the Belmont Derby, and he gets back to the barn, and he's pretty much cooled out already. And it's because he just wasn't able to get through the track and wasn't able to do what he needed to do. So he cooled out pretty quick. So we kind of had an idea that, you know, the turf had a lot to do with that. And look, as far as running on Tapeta track and, you know, and taking this step forward, we really had no choice. You know, we needed to get up there, run in that race. We had that race in mind from last year. What we didn't expect was last fall, he got pretty sick. He ended up in a clinic. But we always had this race in mind. And as last work, Irad came over and worked him on the turf. We worked him on the turf because he couldn't possibly work as good on the dirt as he works on the turf. And it wasn't so much the 101 and change. It was the gallop out in 13, the gallop out in 25. And, I mean, he'd have gone around there again if he let him. And, again, walks back to the barn, and he's cooled out by the time he's home. That horse, you know, was touting himself that he was ready to run.
As I mentioned, I don't know if you heard as I was leading into your visit, but Clocker John Nichols from Churchill, who was on hand, and John was listening as we were previewing Friday, and he sent me a text. He said, Serpy's horse is look out. When you say he was touting himself, absolutely, the guys with the binoculars all were all aboard, and frankly, the public, the betting public, took him seriously to go favored in this field.
Yeah, and I guess I don't know where their information source came from, but again, you know, like you heard, anybody that watched him breeze that day that he breezed would just had to be like, well, who's this horse? You know, because he could have been going anywhere in any kind of race, and you would have been just, you know, you just couldn't have been any happier with the way he worked and then the way he came out of the work. I mean, we have been getting a lot of rain up here, and a few days he had to, like, jog rather than gallop on the track because the track was in kind of rough shape, and it was all we could do to hold him on the ground. And, you know, I give my credit to Rodrigo Ubilo, who helps me out at the barn. He gets on him, and he did a really super super good job with this horse, and you know, and keeping him in line, you know, just to get him up there.
Well, and Phil, that's a nice luxury to have, to have somebody who saddled plenty of his own winners to help you with horses.
Yeah, absolutely. We go back a long way, and he's a great rider. You know, he was, you know, unfortunately, all of us that had trained for Chester and Mary Broman, you know, Mr. Broman decided it was time to cut it way back, and Rodrigo, you know, was one of Mr. Yeah. Broman's main guys. And fortunately for me, he had some time to come work with me, and he'd worked with me before, and we do things well together, so that was a big plus for all of us.
Safe conduct, prominent throughout, and I thought Arad did a nice job, stringing everybody along, and then letting it out a notch whenever somebody came to probe him, and had literally just enough to hold the oncoming closer safe.
Arad is, before I felt like he was a possessed, relentless rider, which he was. But Irad has now matured into a rider that really, really understands how a race unfolds and what he needs to do with the horse. Getting that horse, listen, they had the double draw. So you draw till yourself for me, and that's the order you get to pick. And well, we drew number 13, so we were the last ones to pick. And that left the 13 hole and the one hole. And believe me, people up there do not want that one hole. That's why the second to last person took the 13. And the great thing is, you know, the first 10 seconds of that race really, to me, dictated that horse having just enough at the end to hold off all the oncomers. He did just an incredible job of getting him out of the one hole, getting position where he needed the horse to be without really using the horse. You'll see he never really has to really, really bang on him or ask him to get him where he needed to be. And then, you know, he knows the game after that. He knows who's around him. He's got that sixth sense. He knows who's coming where and when, and he's just a smart rider. And he didn't use that horse all at once. He used them where he needed to use them, and then when it came down to the end, it was Irad and the horse. And I got to tell you, you know, there's some incredibly great riders that can finish. There's nobody better than him. There's nobody that can finish, you know, like Irad can. I mean, you know, Luis Saez, I would put him right there with him, you know, guys like that. But, I mean, you knew you were going to get everything in the end, and fortunately, you know, we got there on time.
Safe conduct. The Queen's Plate, 162nd running, and now you got, I mean, everybody, you know, will ask about the Prince of Wales, but you would seem like the Breeders' Futurity is the one that makes the most sense for a target.
Yeah, you know, and I know what a great honor it is to bring a horse up there and win that race. In fact, I was really sorry that I didn't personally get to go there, but because of COVID restrictions and sure, a lot of things still going on, we felt that it was better for me to stay here. And my longtime partner, Lisa Barkowski, flew out of our barn down in Florida up to Canada. You know, so we know what this means to people, especially the people in Canada. But we have to look at this thing realistically. The horse came back the next day. He's in excellent shape. He'll get a couple of extra days off. We'll take him out to the track. And it's just something I need to discuss with Bob Vukovic as far as, you know, our game plan moving forward. So I don't want to say yes, and I don't want to say no. But, you know, it's just something we'll discuss in a few days.
Well, we'll look forward to it. And, Phil, you know, while we're together, I know yesterday you joined my friend Joe Bianca and the TDN Writers Room show. And one of the topics that you're certainly not, you know, shy about voicing the opinion, some of the frustrations involved with attracting owners these days, and you know, reference somebody like Rodrigo, who obviously capable, and there's been any number of outfits. When you see a Buff Bradley leave training, and Charlie Lopresti, and etc. Talk, for those that haven't didn't get a chance to hear yet from yesterday, talk a little bit about that topic, because I could sense that it's kind of maddening.
Well, it is, you know, and in my case, you know, we were never able to bring up the numbers, you know, like win percentage-wise, because, you know, when I first came to New York, I trained for Fred Hooper, a breeder, and then I went from Mr. Hooper to Flying Z Stable Carl Lizza, which we were grateful for.
Sure.
We had the best time training for Mr. and Mrs. Lizza. They're just great people. They really treated us well. Lisa and myself were personally involved with changing the entire breeding program. And Mr. Lizza had been in the business like 30 years and never won an owner's title. And by the time he had passed away, we had won 13 owner's titles for him, including Saratoga, the most coveted, and year-end most wins in New York, which just meant so much to him. But when you're training for breeders, you know, whatever comes out is what you get. And so that can hit on your win percentage a little bit. We went from there. Fortunately, Mr. Broman needed somebody to replace Mike Cushing, because Mike had decided to retire. Right. And we were able to get some horses for the Bromans. And it was short-lived, but again, a sensational guy that understands racing and isn't a finger pointer and gives you good horses to work with, and we enjoyed that very much. But, you know, again, it puts us in the spot we're in now, where, you know, we don't have 35 for Flying Z, and we don't have, you know, 16 for Mr. and Mrs. Broman. So the shelves are a little bit bare, but we'll keep working on that. What I think bothers me is racetracks don't put a stall limit with trainers, and I think a lot of horses sit in the barn that could be running. We're having an unusual year at Saratoga because we always come up here to run, and we just haven't run many horses, and, you know, it's just the way it is sometimes. But there are so many good guys out there. You know, Jimmy Jerkins and I are pretty much blood brothers, and, you know, Jimmy's sitting there with like 16 horses, 17 horses. He should have like, you know, 116 horses, and, you know, the guy's just phenomenal horseman. And there's other guys out there, guys like me and stuff, and they're not getting these horses. And I think a lot of owners are making a big mistake because, you know, when you go to those barns, don't get me wrong, those guys are first-class horsemen. They really are. But your horse is going to get put online somewhere, and that's where things are going to happen, and, you know, and eventually a horse can be injured waiting to run and never gets to run. So that kind of thing just kind of bugs me a little bit. But, you know, again, it's, you know, I don't own all these horses. People have to do what they think they want to do with their horses.
It's a fair point, and, you know, the topic, it gets touched on here and there, and some people talk about, you know, the idea of returning to the days of stall limits, and even that, Phil, it seems, wouldn't work given these, you know, private training centers and you know, farms where, you know, where horses are being maintained and being trained and then swapped out. So even that concept, it feels like that cow left the barn.
Well, you know, but that's always existed, and if that's what people want to do, you know, don't forget that racing, especially in New York, came from an era where one trainer trained for one specific person. You know, now you're in a situation, even with large stables, where, you know, there's guys that could go out and afford, you know, a $1 million yearling or whatever, but now they break it up into groups. So, you know, instead of one, they have four or five of them with some other partners. It's just kind of the way things have evolved. And I'm certainly not trying to tell people how their business model should be, but I do think it affects racing. I do think we don't get to see all the horses we could see run. And I really think that owners, in some instances, are hurting themselves a little bit, you know. And, you know, that's just kind of me. That's just kind of the way I see things right now.
No, I don't want anybody to construe it as, oh, these guys are bitter and you know, that's not what it is. I've also have made the point that the whole marketing element in this era is unusual. There's not everybody that just has the I don't want to say aptitude, but the personality to go out and market themselves, and whether it's, you know, whether it's social media elements or you know, I don't whatever format and tools at anybody's disposal, but it's just different, obviously. And you know, when you talk about, you know, training for a Fred Hooper, Phil, I mean, that's the perfect example. I remember having this when Tommy Kelly was alive, and he and Pat sat with me for a couple of extended visits, and you think about somebody like, you know, like the Kellys, it was a, you know, there was a different business model when it came to trainers, and Tommy's got a line. Tommy Kelly had a line that I love and I repeat often, which is, he said, when you pick out a trainer, you're essentially hiring a friend. And he said, you know, pick somebody that you want to go to dinner with and you want to have, you know, the giant stables, that's not a practical, you know, it's not a practical situation, to be frank.
No, but, you know, it's kind of the way things have evolved. And don't forget, that's the great thing about America, okay? It's free enterprise, and it's out there. If you want to go get it, you can go get it. I certainly don't sit here, you know, and get upset because a guy has 150 horses, whatever. A guy, you know, has a lot of the different divisions wrapped up, whatever, because he has the best horses. I think they've worked hard and they can get that done. But I do think that in certain instances, that like the owners are hurting themselves by their horses not being able to run. So I think the only thing that really, really bothers me in this business, which I'm sure bothers everybody else, is to make sure, we're getting this stuff right. We've had a lot of issues with both issues with drug positives, from Bob Baffert to, Navarro and Jason Service, who I've known since I was a teenager. Those kind of things, which are the dirty side, to the good things that we're really making a lot of headway in, certain protocols for the safety of the horses, which is great. And it makes our job a little bit more difficult, but it's certainly worth it, knowing that the horses are in a safer atmosphere. So I'm happy for that. And I'm hoping that the Horse Racing Integrity Act, that we can all come together under one roof and get this done right and get this game 100% the way it needs to be.
Well put. Phil should ask about at least one other horse, and you had King Angelo break the maiden, I don't know, 2 weeks ago maybe, and it took a while, but this horse has got upside, the 80 buyer graduating.
King Angelo was another horse. He came in last year, and I knew right away that he was a runner. He's a really, really beautifully balanced horse. His owner is super careful and protective of his horses, and we kind of went around a little bit about turf or dirt, and people must think I'm like crazy because one time we have him on the dirt, then we have him on the turf, then we have him on the turf, then we have him on the dirt. We actually had intended on running him back on the dirt, but a little foot issue stopped him from running there because he's just brilliant. They were filming his workouts last year before he ever ran. And then we decided to run on the turf, and it looked like on paper, which races are not run on paper, but it looked like he pretty much dominated those horses and he ran well. I think he's a stakes quality horse, and it just remains to be seen whether that's on turf or dirt.
Nice. King Angelo, a state bred, in fact, now I just lost him. Here we go. Ferrone Stables, a homebred, a Lemon Drop kid. And here's LDK. It's kind of funny. Who'd we talk about over the weekend? With Shug. Shug has got a nice Lemon Drop kid, 2-year-old, in fact. So some of these late... now pensioned, but some late in life runners for Lemon Drop Kid out of an Awesome Again mare, King Angelo. Is Ambersand going to run back before Labor Day?
He is. He's scheduled to run. He's going to run back in an allowance race. He's actually going to be entered today as an MTO to run Saturday, but his race date back on the dirt, it's on September 5th.
That's okay. Nice. Yeah, I like that horse. That's been kind of a personal favorite, Ambersand.
Yeah, and he was a horse. It's weird. He's a Florida bred, so naturally, when we got him to Florida, he didn't like the climate down there. I can't figure that one out. He did. He struggled with the climate a little bit down there. We got him back up into like the cooler weather. And it's not so much the heat as it is, it's a subtropical climate, and it affects horses. And what's funny is, so many times we've gone to Florida, and normally it would be sort of a light-skinned horse or a chestnut horse like he is. And sometimes you can bring them back the next year, and they're great. And then sometimes they just don't care for it. We have a filly in the barn named Tipple, and she just does not like Florida. She just not. So we kept her up here all winter and gave her a little time off, and she had a slight injury that kept her from getting to the races until recently. But it just happens sometimes.
Well, a Queen's Plate winner and plenty to look forward to. Other good ones in the barn. And did you do any shopping, any yearling shopping last week at the sale?
You know, I did not. It's a strong sale, and like I said, they can gang up on you over there.
Sure,
so
no doubt.
I'm going to always pick the one that's like a million six or whatever, but Keeneland's right around the corner, and we also have some homebred New York breads that that some of our clients have bred, so you know, hopefully we'll have some nice horses, some nice two-year-olds for next year.
Well, I hope so, Phil. I'm so excited for you watching on Sunday afternoon, and you know, one of those kinds of wins that you know, goes a long way. You've won plenty of graded stakes and grade ones, and a Queen's Plate, a very nice resume addition.
It's an honor to win that race. It really is. I remember I was like 29 years old, and I was fortunate enough to win the Queen Elizabeth Stakes at Keeneland.
Right.
So we've got the Queen's races all set.
You mentioned Jimmy, right?
For some, move on.
Well, and now you it's pretty funny you brought up Jimmy Jerkins. You and Jimmy both, you know, you got that in common now with a plate.
Yeah. Jimmy's great. In fact, he was over at the barn yesterday afternoon, and God, we've been like brothers for, I don't know, 25 years, I guess. We're just like family. It's just, he's just a great guy, and we've always just gotten along well, and I hope it stays like that forever.
Absolutely. Phil Serpe, everybody, and I know I've told you this other times. When there was a summer and doing the barbecue and had a bunch of guys staying at my house in Greenwich, and we would have the kitchen table, and every evening we'd, the four of us would sit around and handicap, and one of the regular terms that would crop up was "Serpy's hot," and it's become a catchphrase between us, Phil. It's so funny, and whenever you win a couple of races, we text back and forth, "Serpy's hot."
You know, and we've really been fortunate a lot of summers up here, because we've come up to Saratoga sometimes and we're looking down the shed row like, geez, you know, do we have the horses to win up here? And we've had some really super good meets here. And then others are just the way they are. You know, it's the toughest place. It's the toughest place in the world to win a race. I don't care whether it's a claiming race or a maiden race or whatever. It's this, you know, people just, it brings the best out in everybody, trainers, riders, just everybody. And it really means a lot to win here. And we've always appreciated coming up here. It's my favorite place.
And so many people share that. Phil Serpe, congratulations. We'll see you next week. I'm in Vegas for the Handicapping Championship, so I'm going to miss the week. But we're looking forward to a big closing.
Well, thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Not at all. Phil Serpe, everybody, eminently capable, been winning for decades. And go introduce yourself and, you know, send him a horse. You'd be in good hands. I think we're going to talk to Pete, and to top of the hour, I do also have to do the DePaula play of the day on Capital OTB. So we'll do some of that Simo action. And I just heard from Seth. He's going to the draw. I think we can listen into the draw. I thought, but I'm looking. I got to check with Pat McKenna. I just looked on the NYRA website for a link, and I'm not seeing it if they're doing it. So we'll see about it. I'm sure the draw info will make its way through to Twitter pretty regularly as that goes on. But if we can listen in, we will. And I do want to talk, I'm going to bring up, I sent Sid the pedigree of this Queen's Plate winner. And one of the things that's kind of funny about Safe Conduct kind of fun, actually. And I'm sure Sid will mention this if he's had time to go through. Not only was this Bodemeister colt, dropped in Ontario, but he's got a very strong presence. His second dam, Sarah Regal, was a daughter of Regal Classic. So he's got, the Northern Dancer, Vice Regent, Regal Classic line in here. And then the dam, Duchess Dancer, who was Modest, she ends up swinging back through to Ontario. Breeder was Mitchell Kersner of this colt. And, the fact that Duchess Dancer was a sibling of a major Fatal Bullet was a terrific sprinter. You'll remember that was Reed Baker, right? Reed Baker, now retired, I don't know how many. I can see that his record 12 wins and 39 starts, but he almost won a Breeders' Cup sprint. And, top level. So to buy this colt for $45,000, this is, a very nice accomplishment. Well, Casey's trying Pete, and he's a no-show. So it said, anywhere between 9:30 and 10. So I can't, I guess we're not going to, because they're going to reach me here in about 2 minutes for the play of the day. And regarding the play of the day, it's very funny. This morning I wrote up the races. I haven't put together the pick five play yet. I'll wait for the scratches to do that. But last night, after Tina and I went to Piero's last night for dinner, the old school Italian by the convention center, and introduced to me by Howard Barish, either last year or the year before. So that was nice. And we wanted to have at least one romantic meal. And I think she wants to go back. It's funny. She wants to go back to Esther's. She enjoyed Esther's so much on Monday. She said, I want to go back there. So I guess we're going back. But I handicapped last night. We got back from dinner. And my first pass at Saratoga today, I was kind of, I didn't really sense anything kind of grabbing me. But then this morning, I got up at about 3 this morning, I really started to like the sequence. And I've been doing races 5 through 10 essentially, just because it's really impractical for me to get the changes for races 1 through 4 after the show ends at noon. I would be doing everybody a disservice. Saturdays, big days is different, and the weekends are different. But Monday through Friday, essentially, or Wednesday through Friday, it just doesn't make any sense. So anyway, this sequence, you got two maidens that started out, and the first one is Olders, 3 and ups, and I'm anxious to hear what Seth's got to say later about the sequence, because there's at least 4 horses in that maiden fifth that have already proven that they're of real quality. Digital Future for Chad and Seth Klarman, and Kawamiya River, making a second start for Terra Nova, is obviously a player, and I picked, actually, because I like the second start scenario. Brian Lynch has got Cool Quest, the Frosted Colt, out of Val Marie, who there's some pedigree here for the transition to turf. And Jerry O'Dwyer shows up from Delaware with First Law. Those 4 are all horses it's hard to believe that one of these is not going to, you know, that only one of them is going to win. These are good horses that have just either taken time to get to the races or, you know, just have not have run into some buzzsaws. Partner's Hope is off the claim for Linda Rice, one she claimed for herself, a More Than Ready. And probably the fifth horse in here, and you get Luis Saez. But anyway, one of those four seemed like the, you know, any of the four, really. So for those playing the pick six today, that's a tough little way to start, because I don't think any of the four are a surprise. I picked Kawamia River, who's going to be, you know, 4-5 to 1. Strictly on price. Digital Future should be very tough. Adds Blinkers. Goes from the rail with IRAD for Chad. And Seth has mentioned, and that Cool Quest has every right, I think, to like the grass. So there's plenty going on. And then comes a start of the pick five, and you're dealing with state-bred two-year-old fillies going long on the grass. And this is a murky bunch. This is a tough way to start the pick five, but there are a couple of horses to latch on to, and the ones that have run, Waterville and Oak Loves a Fight, those seem like the two you're going to start out with. And let me join the Capital OTB. There we go. And Casey, yeah, you can patch Pete through, and he's going to have to sit through, if he's got time, he's got to sit through my doing the OTB thing. But I'll get back to the sequence, because there are two first-time starters in that sixth race today that have a look. What Love Looks Like from Pletcher, an English Channel, for Barry Schwartz, homebred out of Jonata, and Kupir, a Three Colleens Barkley Tag Cupid that is 8-1 and might not be ready first time. That's not necessarily a Barkley specialty, but a horse to watch. So, Pete, I'm going to do Capital OTB here in a minute. You've been on for this before. I'm just waiting for them to give me the signal. Good morning.
Good morning to you, my friend. Yeah, but it'll curious to see who you go with for your DePaulo play of the day over there on Capital OTB. I can sit tight and we can yap for a minute after.
Absolutely, and I'm trying to catch Brian's attention. He says 1 minute. Okay, I'll tell people it's from the 10th race. I don't know if you heard how much of what I was talking about, but it's funny. This is one of those cards where I handicapped it or, you know, made a pass through, and I thought, meh. I don't know if there's anything here of substance that I could latch onto. But then when I sat down this morning early and wrote it up, I suddenly was like, this is all right, and I'm anxious to put a ticket together, because I think this is a fun sequence.
I love it when you can keep grinding on a card and come up with some clarity. I'm sure you're going to have a bunch of winners for us today.
Well, and let's say, you know, I'm not famous for, you know, for sweeping cards with the on top selections. Yeah, you ready? Yeah, I'm getting the cue here from Brian Dorenzo, and good morning to, I'm guessing it's Anthony and Brian. Is that who's? Yeah, Anthony and Brian. All right, here's what we're doing, folks. I'm talking to Pete Fornatel on the radio, and here, let me show you. There you go. There's the view. This is the ballroom at Bally's. This is the event center at Bally's. And they're about two thirds of the way through setting the room up. And normally Brian and Seth would be here, but instead they're tethered to the spa. Let's talk about this card. And I was just telling Pete Fornatel how much fun I think the sequence ends up being. And when you get to the late double today, that's where I kind of was boiling down for the play of the day. There's actually a horse that I'm just going to mention that I think is worth playing in a very tough edition of the John's Call. This is a really well-matched field. And almost nobody would surprise me. There's no pace, though. Zero pace. There's nobody that likes the lead. However, Luis Saez gets on Rise the Guy, 6-1 for Ian Wilkes. That's the horse that is a catalyst in here. And the thought would be that Luis Saez gets aggressive. So if you're looking for something to latch onto, because, you know, between Red Knight and Shamrocket and Journey to Freedom, Fantasioso, sir, this is a really well-matched field. So if you're looking for a price, I thought Rise the Guy is the guy. However, the play of the day is going to come in the 10th. This is a non-winners of three lifetime. So in a lot of cases, you know, this is horses of, you know, 2 for 30 and 2 for 15, 2 for 17, 2 for 21. So these aren't horses that are accustomed to winning. The horse to beat is My Candy Girl. She's 2 for 12 and moves to Mike Maker from Brad Cox. 7-2 favorite, the horse to beat. The interesting horse, off of a bad trip and returning to the price of the claim, is the 10 Come Storming, 6-1. I think she'll come down from 6-1 with Rosario. However, there's a 20-1 shot in here, and she's competitive. John Stevens, who owns the 4, Seeking Revenge, he comes up from Monmouth, and he runs horses in New York, and he can win in New York. This is a horse that he owns that is coming out of a 20-3 at Monmouth, and yet he brings this one up to Saratoga for a $50,000 purse, and he did this last year. He brought Seeking Revenge here for a very similar kind of a spot and was third, was kind of an even third with Manny Franco. Here he brings Torres, who has ridden Seeking Revenge regularly. And at 20-1, this mare is competitive with this field. I don't know if she can win. She might just be a tri-key type of horse that you put in third with the logicals, like the 10 and the 11, and you look to boost the tri. You could wheel underneath in exactas, and you could have a little bit of a wind punch. So for me, at 20-1, this is the horse in a field of you know, moderate types. This has got me written all over it. So the 4, Seeking Revenge, your DePaula play of the day, and I'll be back tomorrow for more of this frivolity, and you'll be able to see the. You'll be able to see the whole ballroom. It'll be all fixed up. You can see Vince the Stevedore, who just was at Saratoga. You got everything you could want here in action. You got Pete Fornatel on the phone. You can see him later at the Paddock Bar. And I'm not telling anybody to buy Pete drinks anymore, because you're doing it too often. Have Pete buy you a drink instead. There you go. That's all I got. Thanks, everybody. Good luck. There's Capital OTB with the play of the day, and you know, we try. You got to give him some shtick, Pete.
Oh, it was great. I loved it, and that's very good. I would much prefer being able to buy other people drinks at this point in the meet, as you correctly intuited. It's getting a little over the top over there, but that was very entertaining. How does that work? Do they sort of? You don't exactly know when you're going to stop or start. They just, like, tell you to go, and then you just riff to fill time?
More or less. The target is usually about 9:50 in the morning, and sometimes a little later. The Capital OTB kind of plays loose and fast with the timetable. You know, when Seth and I do Loose on the Lead, you know, sometimes it's supposed to be an hour. Sometimes it's an hour and 20 minutes. It's basically until I stop talking.
I like the sound of it. Sort of like the old Howard Stern show.
Well, as has been partly the theme of this lead-up, Pete, to Vegas, you know, so many regulars are not going to be here. That includes you and Paul Matisse and Jonathan. And, you know, there's going to be an incomplete lineup to some degree, but it's not going to stop a champion from being crowned on Sunday evening.
you're not going to have any problem getting a quorum out there. A lot of players, even, you know, with Saratoga going on, know where they'd rather be than Las Vegas, playing for all that loot. It's a fascinating addition. I mean, an NHC like no other, being held in the midst of a pandemic, but done so in a way that, you know, I've talked to some people heading out there who would be qualify as risk categories, and they're feeling really good about the rules and the way that it's all going to go down. And it's still, it's not diminishing the field by all that much. I don't know the final number yet, but I think it's going to be competitive. I think it's going to have a lot of the characteristics that the best NHCs have, and maybe even some more drama than ever before with a record number of potential bonus babies, as it were, going in a field that's a little bit shorter than usual. But, you know, every little bit helps in terms of those players out there chasing the seven-figure paydays in addition to the already mammoth check one gets for winning the thing. I always love, you walk in the ballroom, and typically in that little ante room, they'll have the pictures of all the past champions. There'll be a new picture up there come the next NHC, which happens in just a few months' time. I'm very sad not to be out there with you. Hope I can hop on the airwaves and help you a little bit over the course of the weekend. And then the best thing is, hey, even though I don't get to be there, it won't be long before I get to be at the next one.
Well, that's, you know, that's one of the other funny things about this is that, you know, here it is. It's going to be September, essentially, when we're done, and you're going to turn around, and we'll be here in literally less than 5 months, because it happens that we're moving back into January. We haven't had a January presence, a January date, in a while.
Yes, and I love it at that time of year. We're horse racing. I mean, I understand the arguments against. In terms of, you know, is it the best racing of the year at that time of year? No, it's not the best, but it's still very good between the fare we get from Gulfstream and Santa Anita. It becomes the main theme in racing for the weekend. I think that's a great thing for horse players in general, just to have our concept, our existence be acknowledged by the industry. That's a beautiful thing. And for me, you know, not much of a choice. Go to the desert in August versus go to the desert in the winter. So I love the winter dates, and I'm very much looking forward already to that one, because I'm definitely getting the FOMO with you out there and so many of the other players we've been talking to out there. I did a whole NHC pregame show over on the In the Money Network, talking to a bunch of the players eligible for bonuses and following some of the main, what I'm seeing as the main storylines heading in. And it was definitely, I was definitely getting those pangs of, I want to see these people, I want to be in that room. But if you can't be in the room, the next best thing is going to be to listen to the At the Races coverage. SteveBick.com, that live link there, of course, SiriusXM. However you listen to Steve's stuff, I mean, year in, year out, he's done so much. You've done so much to put this event out there in the world, and I'm excited to follow vicariously.
Thank you. And it for any uncertainty that there might have been, getting the list of the last chance, next chance tournament races and for tomorrow, and then when I came down the downstairs, the list of Friday's day one, 62 races, Pete, to choose from, and the, you know, the funny part about it is, let's see, you've got well, only two racetracks that we see in the winter, and Gulfstream and Golden Gate, that essentially run, you know, 12 months a year, Saratoga, Ellis, Monmouth, Woodbine, and Del Mar. Really fresh and new to these players. And I asked, you know, Trey Stiles came down yesterday and joined me for like the last 20-25 minutes, and I asked him what he thought about, you know, how the summer track lineup would affect play, and you know, I made the suggestion that perhaps the, you know, the turf preferential types would benefit, you know, assuming that everything, you know, weather-wise is square, and that we get, you know, the grass races as scheduled. But, you know, you think about the late John Conti, the grass is greener, and the turf players should really benefit here.
I think so. Just going to be so many more choices. Now, it is interesting, as spread around as racing is, it might, I'm curious to see, I'm sure somebody will look and do the percentage of races that are turf and look at the field sizes. I'm curious to see how dramatic of a difference it is. But we just know from past winter NHCs, when there's good weather versus when there's bad weather, and the players, you know, a Jonathan or a Paul Matisse, who's actually actively doing their rain dance, because they're not as big of a fan of the chaos of turf races. But then there's a whole other contingent of contest players, and John Conti, a great example, and perhaps the patron saint in this regard. Give them the turf grab bags all day long. That's where, because of the nature of turf racing, trips around tight turns and all that stuff, you can get a lot more creative horses in, because there's a little bit more chaos. And for me, it's not a judgment thing. One's better, one's worse. It's just all about finding the races that suit your handicapping personality. And I think you're right. The turf players, assuming, you know, knock, knock, it gets the nice weather all over the place. But they may just be spoiled for choice this weekend at the NHC.
Pete, I appreciate the chance to check in. I'm going to get Bill Downs in here, and we will talk to you as soon as Friday.
I hope so, and I just want to put in a very quick plug, horseplayers.com, Horse Player Happy Hour races 3 through 10 at Saratoga tomorrow.
Did we lose Pete?
Can you hear me, Steve?
Yeah, I lost. Pete was, I don't know. Either we lost Pete or I don't know. It doesn't matter. Horse player happy hour for Pete. All right. Bill Downs, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Well, you know, you have called plenty of these, the morning card that Indiana has featured. But this, you know, this... an adjustment to the schedule for, you know, the heat index, so very thoughtful on that front.
Yeah, you know, I guess it had to be done. You know, temperatures are going to be in the mid-90s when it's all said and done, and so we just decided to shift the post times up a few hours, and you know, still the back half of the card, I think, is pretty darn good from a handicapping perspective. And you got those two big stakes races for the Indiana Breds on turf, and even though it's a little bit more overcast than it's been in the last couple of weeks here at Indiana Grand, we're still fast and firm, and even if we do get a little bit of rain, it's not going to make any difference, because we certainly do need it, as it's been very drought-like conditions in the last month here at Indiana Grand.
Well, and we haven't talked in at least 2 weeks. From a catch-up standpoint, you know, just watching the action, I mentioned again this morning about, you know, the pick fives. We feature them when we get together. And already this week, you had that $10,000 payout on Monday. Yesterday, $1,600 with two odds-on winners. It offers just a great opportunity on a daily basis.
Yep, that's probably the number one thing I always take a look at is how to attack the pick five, and what are the options and the different variables that each sequence that does attest the horse players out there. And it's, you know, the low takeout of 11.99%, one of the lowest pick five takeouts in North America, and even the pick fours, when you get some bigger fields at 15%, is pretty darn low as well.
Well, the sequence today, I don't know if we got time for, because you've got the next race in about 15 minutes. Randy Klopp won the opener at even money. And we can at least talk about the two stakes, though, and give people some help in the eighth and the ninth, Bill. And in state breds going a mile and a 16th on the grass. The girls go first in the Peony. And felt like to me there were four pretty clear players, the two favorites, and then a couple of 6-1 shots. What's your call here?
Well, my best bet of the day is Bumble of Love. I have to say I have an affinity for Bumble of Love. She has run five times this year before, and of those five races, I picked her as the best bet in four of them, and she's won three of them. So I have a pretty good track record with Bumble of Love, and she's a different filly on the turf. She has really upped her game, I thought. big time in her last couple of races, including that winning its open company allowance option of claimers on July 29th. She's had the race won at the top of the stretch in both of those races, and she's the one to beat. But as you mentioned, this is not the easiest spot in the world. A lot of very strong fillies and mares in the race. Bloody Mary Morton had such a good race on June 15th. It was almost impossible for her to repeat that type of effort on August the 9th. But she still ran well as the odds-on favorite. Lost to the Beauty's Tale, who's in this race for trainer Kim Hammond, who the Beauty's Tale stayed off of that early pace and was able to run down Bloody Mary Morton. Diamond Solitaire, a three-year-old filly, taking on older. Tried the turf two starts ago, finished fifth in the Owens Lucky Star, but, you know, with a yielding turf, I'd rather see give her one more chance in the grass before I say she's better on the dirt. And then Timeless Rose is a filly that has lost all her races at Indiana Grand this year, but she's gotten better and better. And her race two starts ago was a really strong race in which she lost to leading the charge, we're going to talk about in probably a moment or two.
And I you hit all the highlights, and Bumble of Love, absolutely, and Bloody Mary Morning, you know, the two favorites. You mentioned one of those 2 6-to-1s that I'm interested in with the Beauty's Tale, and you know, returning to State Bred Company was a nice tonic for this Tale of a Cotty mare for Kim Hammond, and I thought that at 6-to-1, at least want to use this one underneath, coming from a little bit off the pace, and one horse that should be prominent, fairly prominent throughout. Timeless Rose, 6-to-1, Tony Granitz, and
yep.
Should get a very nice stalky type trip, stalk and finish. So for me, in no particular order, 3, 7, 9, 10.
Yeah, and one other thing I would mention is that Prescott has been aboard Bloody Mary Morning and Bumble of Love, and he chose Bloody Mary Morning in this race.
Hmm.
Granted, it's the favorite, but it's quite a decision between those one filly, still a filly, and one's a mare, but Prescott on Bloody Mary Morning.
You know, it's funny. I just looked down to see the terms of rider preference, and Prescott rode for Randy Matthews going all the way back to last fall, and this is a mare that is just hickory, and she has not been out of the exacta since October, every race since October 20th last year, she's been
yep.
first or second. Well, she was third, actually, in a 16. But, I mean, she's cashing checks left, right, and center. A go, Lionel, go that Randy Matthews bred and was claimed away by Jerry Brooks. And then he went back and got, well, Keith Nations claimed, and then I don't know if Randy Matthews bought her back. I'm gonna get Randy Matthews on, and I want to hear a little bit more, because he's obviously got a real attachment to this mare, and she's running her best races at age six.
Yes, and it probably does go off as the favorite. I'm guessing, at least I made her the morning line favorite in that race, and it's always a great handicapping angle when respected trainers go back and get a horse that they trained before, and that's the case with Bloody Mary Morton.
Turn to the boys' race, the Buchero, and when the PPs came out, I scoured it to see if Glyshaw had a runner, because trainers love to target races that are named for horses that they trained.
Yep, but alas, I don't see one
no.
in there, but I know Tim will be in the winner's circle to help present the winning trophy to the winning connections, as well as a couple of Vaquero's owners when he was racing, so that will be kind of cool to see. But, you know, Keith Scratch is Strong Tide, and I was going to try and beat Strong Tide. I thought he was coming
Ooh.
So back. Yeah, so he's out of the race. Major Sparks is out of the race. Still got a field of 12 in here. and kind of really throws the morning line for a loop, if you will. I guess, you know, Cash Logistics, they made the second choice in the morning line at 5-1, who was a very nice winner of allowance race on dirt, the race that came off the turf on July 19th, defeated Toss of Fate and Chip Off the Old Blocker, both in this race. Cash Logistics still looking for his first turf win, but he ran second to Snack Stakes in this turf course as a three-year-old last year, and ran decent in a couple, one of the two races down at Tampa in those open allowance optional claiming races. And Cash Logistics certainly coming into this race doesn't have to have the lead. I don't think he wants it with horses like Chip Off the Old Block and Classy Cowboy who have inside posts, but he should get a pretty good stalking trip in here. Leading the charge is probably the one that interests me the most in this race. Been very patient with this horse. Yeah, they ran him in the Snack Stakes last year, but they've just been going through conditions. He really kind of came into his own at the end of last season. That was a big win. And then he followed it up with a couple of other wins. He defeated Timeless Rose, the filly we talked about in the earlier stakes race last time out, and which was a very, I thought, a very strong performance. And, you know, he doesn't have to be necessarily right off the pace. He can stalk. He can sit maybe mid-pack as well. But leading the charge, probably my top choice in here. But there's a lot of horses you can use. Toss the Fate for Jeff Greenhill, who's run some good races in the past. And Max Express, who finally broke through with his first turf win in an allowance optional claiming race, open allowance optional claiming race on August 17th. He's been very, very consistent on the turf in the money all six starts. Likes to come from off the pace. If you think the early pace is going to be quick, Max Express might be one to use underneath for trainer Mike Lauer, who still has plenty of horses in his ninth race.
You know, and as you mentioned, with Strong Tide coming out and Major Sparks was an AE, but you can add Stewards Rule will run, and Andrea Rodriguez picked up the mount. The question for me, if we were looking for a price in here, is whether Chip Off the Old Block with Lauer is able to, you know, do anything on the grass. And in when he has tried the grass, he's 0-2. But it's a while back. I mean, certainly as a Reddy's image, there's no reason, certainly from pedigree, that Chip Off the Old Block shouldn't be okay on the grass, because if he is, he's going to have to be caught at some point.
Yeah, you know, Steve, I want to see Chip Off the Old Block in a turf sprint. You know, that would be what okay. I'm more worried about the distance than I am the turf.
Okay,
and that's the dilemma with Chip Off the Old Block. And you know, he probably takes some money in here. You know, like I said, with Strong Tide out, kind of everyone's goes down a notch or two, at least the contenders in terms of the price and the morning line, what it would be if I made another morning line. But Chip Off the Old Block, if he can get to the front end, you know, Classy Cowboy's been on the lead, but I think Chip Off the Old Block is obviously quicker than Classy Cowboy, so he could be the one up going to the far turn that has the lead, and he's not the worst selection in the world, that's for sure.
And if you're looking for a price, I can tell you there's a horse that is a steady developing type, and that's Andy Brown's Star Spangled
Express.
Yeah,
I knew you were going to go there.
15-1, and on paper it looks like he's really improved by. You know, Bermudez letting him out and putting him on the engine. But he has certainly been successful in a stalking role. And, you know, assuming, going back to Chip Off the Old Block, probably has got that sprint speed that you're referring to. Bermudez probably sits second with Star Spangled Express. And if Chip Off the Old Block drops anchor, then it's Star Spangled Express who's going to inherit the lead at that point. And is okay. Would have to take another step forward to win, but you're certainly getting the right price for that proposition.
I agree, because his two turf races were in 2000, or he had three turf races, but the last two were in the summer and the fall here at Indiana Grand in 2020. And he's a different horse now than he was last year. And he still ran okay on the turf. He ran second in entry-level allowance race, but he's ran off three wins in a row. He deserves a chance to run, and he's by Unbridled Express, who's certainly not bad on the turf at all, and the Star Spangled Express intriguing long shot in the Bucaro.
Andy Brown doesn't start a lot of horses, but he wins.
Yeah, and then when you got a horse like Star Spangled Express winning $37,000, $39,000, and $42,000 allowance races, that's going to help your percentage.
Any other spots before I let you go, Bill? I know you got a race coming up pretty quickly. Anything in the rest of that sequence that you think people can really get a really tie
on
to?
Well, you know, Bella Volet is going to be a big single in the seventh race, and I kind of agree with everyone on that. You know, Creative Credit ran Too Good to Lose, and that's in race number six. She ran Too Good to Lose against the boys. She battled the entire way and just got beat by a half. I'm not really thrilled with the outside post, but Creative Credit certainly should be used in race number six.
Very good. Bill Downs, everybody, and what's your afternoon plans? You can get a round of golf in, maybe.
Yeah, well, I got to do that morning line and program comments at some point, so we'll see how it all goes.
I love it. Bill, I enjoyed it, and great to catch up, and we'll talk either next week or the week after.
Sounds good.
Bill Downs won, everybody, on your Twitter, and early day of action that is underway at Indiana. Race two, let's see, just I could tell Bill was getting tight there. Let's see. They are 4 minutes to post, so he's got to say, he may have missed the post parade, actually, by having this visit in. All right, we've ripped through, my God, we've ripped through 90 minutes. Let's take a break, probably our only one of the morning. We're about 15 minutes away from the draw, and thanks to a couple different friends for the specifics, the YouTube channel for those that want to watch the draw. Naira's YouTube channel has got it, and thanks to Kevin and Leslie for that info. And we'll have Sid. We'll get Sid in here. We got Seth Merrill later. I'm going to see if Todd is going to shake loose if he's at the draw for the Q&A, as you might think. All right. So it's happening, and we're at the event center at Bally's. They're starting to drop the tablecloths on the table. It's almost there. Put the chairs up and seat assignments, not assignments, but people will start to, you know, put their tags on their chairs and getting close here. Tomorrow's last chance, next chance tournament, a play-in opportunity, and we'll have mandatories coming soon, either later this afternoon or first thing tomorrow for day one of NHC. Back after this to Las Vegas.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions.